Available. Congratulations! You have learned the spell Summon Weak Insects. Summons a host of stinging and biting insects in a 10-foot-wide circle. Causes minimal damage, but impedes concentration. This is a spell of earth magic. Cost 25 mana. Duration 5 minutes. Range 20 feet. Cast time 1 second. Cooldown 20 minutes. Constant use and depletion of his stamina and mana earned him a +1 to constitution, endurance, and wisdom. Double shot, which had seemed almost useless initially, got less of a penalty as he leveled it. He could see the benefit of continuing to invest in the skill if at level 50 he could fire twice as fast as another archer. Drill shot could definitely come in handy as well. Richter had asked Yulinde if drill shot could negate all armor when the skill level was high enough. Unfortunately, the answer was no. Different skills had different caps they could advance to. Drill shot, for instance, could ignore up to 60% of armor when maxed out at skill level 50. The armor penetration also depended on the type of arrow being used and the type of armor it was being used against. A simple iron arrow would barely harm dragon scale armor, for instance, even if drill shot was maxed. Once again, reality was intruding on Richter's plans for world domination. There was no denying the usefulness of the training and the importance of his instructors. Yulindi explained that training with someone at a higher level than you in a skill would increase the speed with which you learn the skill. The amount of the bonus was based on the level of the trainer compared to your respective level. Richter also asked how Yulindi could teach light armor skills when he was only a journeyman in that skill. The archer looked confused for a moment until Richter talked about how he knew only adept and master magicians could teach spells. Yulindi nodded in understanding and said that didn't apply to learning new skills. An added benefit of the training was that Sion was able to learn from Yulindi as well. The sprite obtained the skills Grace in Combat, Double Shot, and Drill Shot, but even more useful, Stun Shot. It was a level 10 archery subskill, so unfortunately, the subskill remained beyond Richter's grasp. Training had been tiring, but extremely beneficial and efficient. He definitely progressed faster than he would have alone. Richter continually professed how thankful he was that these three were going to be part of his village. When he expressed that to Quasia, she just gave him a pinch on the butt and a saucy wink before walking off. The gnome's forward behavior didn't hold Richter's attention long. He was daydreaming of creating a culture of open learning in the Mist Village. From what he could see, knowledge was guarded jealously in the land. The price of the books was a clear indication. One book cost 3 months of wages for the average worker. That wouldn't be the case in his village. Every skill that could be learned would be. Dreams of arrow-shooting dark earth magicians were dancing through his head. He decided to be honest with himself. Jedis. He really wanted Jedis. The 3 days came and went surprisingly quickly. The only breaks Richter took from his training was to check on the progress of his new people. Both the humans and non-humans had been industrious about organizing for passage to their new home. The human settlers, along with Randolphus, had left for Leaf's Crossing the day before. Richter had paid several coins to a messenger to ride ahead and carry a message to Rosie at the Whistling Hen. That, more than anything else, drove home how much he had taken for granted on Earth. In an age where almost everyone had access to VR mail, or at least archaic email, communication around the world was commonplace. Here in the land, he had just paid a month's wages to mail a letter. He didn't waste the opportunity. The note told Rosie that he needed to rent out the entire inn to house the human portion of his people for a day or two. He included in the message what he hoped was a sufficient amount of coins for their room and board, but promised to make up the difference in a few days if he was short. The non-humans had slowly ferreted their families to the Laughing Imp or other safe houses that Tirad and his compatriots had access to. It had been an emotional series of days for them, as there was a very real possibility that they would not see those left behind for several years, if ever again. Tirad and Richter had decided to implement everything on the same day. The same day of the Count's ball, The holds of the ships they had commissioned were slowly filled throughout the day with the non-humans. Richter and Sion would join them after saving Isabel. She would also come to the village, as it would be way too dangerous for her to remain in Law after escaping the Count. Tirad would stay behind and try to find the other non-humans that had been sold. So far, no further information had been gleaned from the ledger. He was ultimately planning to sell the inn and, if possible, make a new life in Leaf's Crossing. Isabel could join him sometime later. Due to his training and organizing, Richter lost track of time. Before he knew it, Tirad had walked into the room at the end of the hallway where Richter was sitting with Zar and simply said, "It's time." Chapter 25, Day 48, Hakor 1, 15,368 ABG. Tirad's contact in the Count's household had found servants' uniforms for them to wear. Besides holding women against their will, apparently Count Stonek was also guilty of horrible taste. His house colors were burnt orange and white. Richter felt like a creamsicle. To make it worse, it wasn't just a touch of orange here and there. Instead, the servants were required to wear a poncho-like outfit that made them look like the playing cards that served the Queen of Hearts in Alice in Wonderland. The only consolation was that Richter was sure everyone would be so distracted by the garish clothes that no one would remember their faces. Sion was not happy to be left out of the plan, but agreed to hide in a nearby alley. If all went pear-shaped, he could cover their retreat. The noise from a well-imbued arrow strike should scare anyone, and might give them precious moments to escape. The infiltration party was composed only of Richter, Tirad, and Jeremy. Apparently the window to enter the Count's home was extremely short, and any more people would cause a problem. Richter wore his armor under the clothes, any buckles wrapped in cloth so as not to make noise and betray their disguise. Getting into the Count's house was actually easy. The party meant a large amount of deliveries and movement. The three picked up an order the head of the kitchen had made at a local bakery, and then walked in through the back gate. The guard only checked their baskets of bread against a list of suspected deliveries, then barked at them to move along. Richter was somewhat surprised, but then he realized that it was no different than any large upscale party in his world. This was just the house of a rich guy, not some secret government bunker. After all, who would challenge a noble who had his own private army and could kill them with zero consequences? Guess just three badass mofos like us, Richter thought with a smile. They walked in and delivered the bread to the kitchen. Tirad's contact turned out to be a nondescript man of middling height and brown hair. He barely acknowledged Richter or Jeremy. Tirad had told them about the huge risk the man was taking, and they all agreed not to engage him or try to exchange names. They had timed their entrance to coincide with when the food was brought up to the Count's room. It minimized their risk of being discovered as frauds. Tirad picked up a plate of food and walked up the stairs. Richter and Jeremy followed discreetly behind. When he got to the room, the guards merely waved him through, apparently well used to the Count's captives being fed at this time. He missed half a step when one guard made an off-color comment about the girl having more than enough to eat when the Count returned. Richter thought Tirad might kill the man, but he thankfully stuck with the plan and entered the room. As soon as he was inside, Richter started counting. The plan was to get to 100 count and then cast the spell. Jeremy was keeping lookout on the stairs one floor down. The greatest weakness in the plan was that there was no one to watch the far end of the hall. If anyone came from that direction while Richter was casting troubled sleep upon the guards, or if the spell didn't work, the jig was up. He counted silently, and at 97 began to cast the spell. As Richter was counting, he realized that he had never discussed with Tirad if the count to 100 was when the man would exit or when Richter was supposed to cast the spell. It would be horrible for them all to be killed for such a stupid mistake. Go on three, or 1, 2, 3, then go, was one of the biggest flaws in guy communication. Even though sleep spells were lethal weapons as they allowed for a coup de grace, The entire plan would fall apart if Tarad exited before the guards were knocked out. Peeking around the corner to see the two guards, Richter focused his will and cast the spell. The necessary words and hand movements coming unbidden but flawlessly executed. The guard closest to him slumped as soon as Richter finished casting the spell. The other reached out a hand to brace himself against the wall, though. He strained to straighten his legs, and his mouth opened to shout, but after a second more, he collapsed next to the other one. Richter ran forward, knocking twice on the door. Tarad opened the door and grabbed one of the guards under the arms, dragging him into the room. Richter did the same with the other guard. The entire process, including the spell, took 15 seconds. Jeremy came in behind him, and they closed the door. The two of them began to strip the guards. A brown-haired elven beauty with haunted eyes held onto Tarad for a second with frantic strength. He murmured in her ear and then stared into her eyes. She nodded her head and released him, but Richter noticed her hands were still shaking. The livery of the guards was similar to the uniform of the servants, but of course they were also wearing armor. Luckily, it was not plate, or there was no way they would have gotten it off in a reasonable amount of time. Each guard was wearing a chainmail shirt, chainmail coif, and a kettle helm. They each had swords and kite shields as well. Richter tried to slow his breathing as he focused on his task. He cast weak haste on the three of them, hoping to save precious minutes. He grimaced slightly at the loss of the mana, almost half of his total. He took a mana potion. He hated to use it, but if there was a fight on the way out, he would want his mana higher. His mana bar refilled quickly. After several minutes, each guard had been stripped and Tarad and Jeremy were wearing their armor and weapons. They would, of course, not pass a close inspection, but from a distance, they looked like any other two guards. It had been decided Richter would not pose as a guard on the way out because his wood sprite armor was superior to anything his colleagues had. He had lost the bonus of having the complete set on, unfortunately, having had to remove the helm, gauntlets and shoes, as they could not be concealed in the disguise as servant. They tied up the actual guards, shoving gags in their mouths. The spell was supposed to last an hour, but one had shown some resistance, so who knew how long he would actually be out. Richter stood up and took in his surroundings. The room was opulent, to say the least. Paintings and tapestries covered the stone walls. A round table of almost black wood was off to the left side of the room with four upholstered chairs, each with intricate stitching. A canopied bed that could easily fit 10 people was against the back wall, the sheets rumpled and hanging off the side of the bed. A large fireplace was resting cold against one wall. The most fascinating thing in the room was the woman they had come to save. Isabel was about 5 feet 8 inches tall. Her hair was loose around her shoulders and hung well past her shoulders. Her skin was the dusky brown of the wood elves. It had the appearance of a black base that had been painted over with chestnut in a way he had associated with Indians he knew back home. A tight-fitting gown didn't hide hips that were neither narrow nor wide, a slender waist and small, firm breasts. What arrested him was her eyes, though. Her irises were gold like wheat seen on a cloudless day in midsummer. Those same beautiful eyes were bloodshot and sorrow-filled. They convinced him of one thing. He would kill the Count if he ever had the opportunity. Tarad was holding her again, and her grip seemed even tighter than before. Richter waited a few seconds, not wanting to disturb the comfort this woman was clearly seeking from her loved one, but he couldn't ignore their precarious position for long. Clearing his throat, he said, Tarad, we have to get her dressed and get out of here. The man made eye contact with Richter, his gaze initially furious that anyone would take him away from comforting his lost love even for a moment, but he came back to himself and nodded, separating from the woman again. Turning his back to give her privacy, Richter looked out at the wealth in the room. He looked at Jeremy and said, "You move very quietly. Am I correct in assuming that you have a, non-traditional way of earning a living?" The man stared at him for a moment before chuckling.
You might be safe to assume that.
Why? Giving a ruthless smile, Richter replied, "Because in the next few minutes, we are going to rob this bastard blind." They rummaged through a small chest at the foot of the bed, finding a pouch of coins and several daggers. In one nightstand, he found more coins and a small blue wand about a foot and a half long with a white jewel the size of a robin's egg at the end, held in place by a stylized claw. More basic items were present, and Richter didn't leave anything behind, sweeping everything into his bag. He cleared the expensive flatware, plates, and goblets from the table. For good measure, he opened the closet and shoved all of the clothes and shoes he found there into his bag of holding. He thought again that the bag was worth at least twice what he had paid for it. Whatever he shoved in, the bag remained flat on the outside. He took his glass dagger to the edge of the framed paintings, cut them loose, and rolled them up along with the rest of the stolen loot. That was when he saw Jeremy looking intently into the cubby of the other nightstand. A focused look was on the other man's face, and he was reaching inside the top drawer. Searching for a moment, he seemed to press something. The side of the nightstand popped open, revealing a hidden cubby. Richter saw that a metal door, presumably for a safe, had been built into the nightstand.
"Damn! I could open this, but we don't have the time!"
Jeremy angrily shook his head.
"Wait," Richter told him. "Let me try something."
Richter placed his hand on the safe and invoked his dungeon ring. He gave a delighted smile when he heard a click. He pulled open the safe and saw it was full of jewels, papers, and what was this? It looked like the Count's signet ring. With an evil smile, Richter placed it in his bag, thinking the good Count would love knowing his ring would help to feed the non-humans he had been persecuting. Gesturing to the jewels, he looked at Jeremy, who smiled and nodded his head. The man swept half the gems up and placed them in his pouch. He left the rest for Richter.
"We are ready,"
Tirad called. He was wiping tears from Isabel's face and telling her to be brave.
"We need to go."
Richter shoved the rest of the jewels and the papers into his bag and stood. The four of them mentally prepared themselves, and then Richter stepped out into the hall. Seeing that it was still empty, he waved his companions forward and they walked back the way they had come. The hardest part was remaining calm and keeping an unhurried pace. To know how difficult it was, imagine having to pee really badly and also walking away from a growling dog. It was nerve-wracking. And yet they couldn't show it. Despite the stress of the situation, they made their way along the servant corridors with no issues. The most dangerous part of the scenario was behind them, and they walked to the side gate that they had used to enter the estate. The two guards were still there, but no one else was currently around. Not wanting to take any chances, Richter cast troubled sleep, and both slumped to the ground. They then just walked out. They met Sion in the nearby alley and ditched the livery of the Count. Pausing only to retrieve his bow and don the rest of his armor, they were quickly away. Jeremy doffed the guard's armor, saying it slowed him down too much. Richter shoved it into his bag, waste not, want not. They picked up the pace, alternating between a walk and a jog down the dark alleys of the capital. Nearing the harbor, they turned down a wide street that exposed them to the light of a full moon. Three other crescent moons hung in the sky as well, which was the only reason that they saw the man standing in the middle of the street.
"Impressive! That was a fair bit of crime you did there. Coming from me, you should take that as a compliment. All of you. Tirad, innkeeper of the Laughing Imp. Jeremy, former cutthroat of the Lawbreakers. Isabel, the lovely wood elf. Sion, the wood sprite. And Richter, the unknown man."
He smiled broadly. Everyone tensed at hearing how well informed the man was.
"How do you know us?" Tirad shouted.
"You are absolutely right. I'm being rude," the man replied, sounding genteel and magnanimous. "Please allow me to introduce myself. My name is Ronan, and I'm the leader of the Nightblades. You may remember that you killed almost all of my new members and burned my house to the ground a few nights ago. I can admit that it has been a hard few days for me and mine.
We lost a few more members to attrition, another thieves' guild that smelled blood in the water. It also took a few days to figure out who to thank for the warm welcome I was greeted with when I came back to my home. Then I remembered who we had sold those pretty little non-humans to, though. So, I checked up on anyone in their lives. The man gave a short laugh. We couldn't be sure which one would be rescued, or exactly who would come, but somehow I had a feeling this little elf maid would stir someone's heart. He laughed again, and this time ugliness could clearly be heard in the sound.
Where are the rest of the people you sold?
Screamed Isabel. Be calm, Isabel, be calm. The friendly note was back in his voice. Do not be so rude. After all, my friends and I have worked so hard to repay all of you for the kindness you have shown us. His voice lowered with each following word. The tone of his communication weighed heavily with anger and scorn. I need to settle this debt. Richter heard a faint scuff on the cobblestones behind them and realized the purpose of Ronan's entire speech had been to stall them. It had allowed the other thieves to find and catch up with them, to come up behind them. Throwing his arm back, he cast grease and was rewarded with cursing coming from multiple spots as thieves came into view, their stealth interrupted as they fell. He turned back and cast Analyze on this man who would face down four armed men alone, even if only as a delaying tactic. Name, Ronan. Human, level 22. Health, 400. Mana, 160. Stamina, 310. Disposition, hatred. Humans are one of the shortest-lived but most prolific breeders in the land. Humans have a broader affinity for skills than other races. No special bonuses to race. Humans get 4 points to distribute per level. Profession, rogue.
What? This man had a profession?
Zutrix had said that only the powerful had professions, and this Ronan was level 22. This could not bode well. Sion drew and fired at Ronan, but the man leaned almost leisurely to the side and disappeared from sight. Tirad pushed Isabel against a wall behind him and drew his sword to protect her. Jeremy activated stealth and vanished as well. Richter began to cast troubled sleep, but was struck with a spear of rock. The attack made his ice dagger look like a toothpick. One attack removed 34 health, striking him in the side and knocking him down. Praying he had a second before being struck again, he cast weak haste. His power with air magic let him quickly get back to his feet. When he stood up, he saw the mage off to the right with a black wand pointed at him, purple light gathering at the tip. Sion shot an imbued strike at the mage, which stopped a good 3 feet short, causing ripples in the cylinder of force around him. The wizard changed his target and pointed the wand at Sion. A purple spear shot out from the end of the wand. Sion had started moving as soon as he saw the wizard aiming his wand. The tennis ball-sized purple spear struck the cobblestones right next to Sion. When it hit the street, it popped and spread a thick purple liquid over the stones, which began to bubble and hiss. A small gobbet landed on Sion's leg. The sprite screamed in pain. He quickly dragged his leg on the street, scraping off the viscous acid. Richter could see the flash of bodies and blades in front of him. Jeremy and Ronan disappearing and reappearing quickly, fighting as only stealthed figures could. They must be guessing where the other would be in a fast-paced and close-range game of cat and mouse. It was impressive that Jeremy had lasted even a few moments against a level 22 rogue. Who knew what benefits the profession brought? The rogues behind him were rolling out of the radius of the grease spell to rejoin the fight. Knowing they would be swarmed if the men got up, Richter reached into his quiver and found the arrow of flame. He shot it at one of the thieves in the oil. The thief gave a grunt of pain when he was hit, but it quickly became squeals of agony when the arrow ignited the grease he had conveniently been rolling around in. The fire spread through the rest of the grease and ignited two other thieves. Three others managed to escape the fire, though, and were quickly getting to their feet. He shouted to Tirad, "Get her out of here!
The longer we wait, the more of them will come. We have to escape!
Sion had recovered quickly and continued to fire shots at the mage, dodging rocky spikes and acid balls in return. None of the arrows were able to penetrate the barrier. Richter fired an imbued arrow at a thief still trying to get up and struck him in the chest. It knocked the man back into the flames of the grease fire, his screams joining the others. Luckily, the flames formed a makeshift wall across the narrow street and gave him some respite from the other two thieves. As soon as he felt the slightest bit safe, though, a thrown knife grazed his temple, putting blood into his right eye. Richter rolled to the right to evade any more attacks. Tirad was moving down the street with Isabel. The docks were in sight, but were still several hundred yards away. Richter cast Summon Weak Insects on the mage, but the bugs remained on the outside of the cylinder of protection the man had made. He tried using Drill Shot, but again his arrow failed to penetrate the barrier. The mage just smirked at him, and then turned his full attention back to Sion. Then Richter heard a gurgle. He turned to the right and saw Jeremy and Ronan phase into view. A knife was sticking out of Jeremy's throat. Jeremy's own blade was in Ronan's side. The two stood face to face. Jeremy's wound was clearly fatal, while Ronan's was most likely damaging, but not life-threatening or even debilitating. Sion, meanwhile, had been caught by a half-arc of stalagmites that appeared in front of the mage, sticking outward and upward. One of the sprite's legs was impaled on a sharp, rocky spike. His companion screamed and tried to pull himself free, but the rock stuck all the way through his thigh. A purple light was once again accumulating at the end of the mage's wand. Richter barely looked as he drew and fired again. The mage was completely ignoring him, having assumed that he wasn't a threat. The thief caster had a sick grin on his face as he savored Sion's impending death. Richter felt a brutal pleasure at seeing the shock on the man's face as the arrow of negation penetrated the circle of protection and pierced the mage's chest. The cylindrical barrier flared once and then faded out of existence. Richter drew, imbued, and released again, the arrow aimed at the man's face. The mage snarled at him while yanking a necklace off and cracking it in his hand. A furious scream of "No!" came from Richter's right. Each of the attackers were enveloped in black smoke, and a moment later they were gone. His last glimpse of Ronan was an insane and furious expression on the man's face just before the rogue disappeared. It was suddenly quiet on the street, except for Sion's grunts of pain as he continued to try to pull himself free. Even the still screaming and burning thieves had disappeared. Richter's already released shot exploded against the wall that the mage had been standing in front of only an instant before. Jeremy's body crumpled to the ground, a scarlet arc of blood coming from the hole that Ronan's blade had left in his neck. It was over. The Earth Mage's escape amulet had taken his entire surviving party away, leaving behind only Richter, Sion, Jeremy, and the dead. Richter ran over to Jeremy, attempting to stabilize the old thief. The blood had already stopped spurting, though, now only dribbling out in weaker and weaker pulses. The dying man smiled weakly, blood on his teeth, and then his eyes glazed over, and he released his last breath. Richter looked down at the dead man, overcome with emotions he didn't have time to express. He let go of Jeremy's neck and looked at the thick blood covering his hand. A moan made him look to the right. He got up and hobbled over to Sion, the pain in his side making his breath come out in short huffs. Richter gave Sion a healing potion and a healing herb. He also placed the healing ring in his friend's hand. Richter looked the sprite in the eye and said, "I'll pull on three, okay? One..." and without further warning, yanked him off of the rock that had impaled him. Sion screamed, glared, and then spit at Richter in as many seconds, and then promptly lost consciousness. Luckily, the potion worked to slow the blood loss down. Richter checked the wound and was relieved that he didn't see any arterial spray. Sion could not use the ring to fully stop the bleeding, so Richter ripped a strip off of his clothes and bound the wound. Furious with anger and exhausted from the brief but fierce exchange, Richter picked up the sprite and looked at Jeremy's body. He couldn't just leave it there. He was reaching down to throw it over his shoulder when Tirad came running back. When the innkeeper saw Jeremy's body, he just said, "No." That soft refusal of a horrible truth was filled with sorrow. Tirad didn't fall apart, though. He walked over to his old friend and picked up the body, freeing Richter to carry Sion. They moved as quickly as possible down to the dock. The shouts of the crew of the ships they had hired could clearly be heard. They ran aboard one of the ships as the sailors pushed the boat away from the dock. They were finally out of immediate danger, but it had been at a high cost. Richter looked out over the moonlit water and checked his prompts. You have completed the quest, Fight for Those Who Cannot Too. Reward, Increased Regard from Tirad. Reward, 8,000 XP. Congratulations! Your relationship with Tirad has improved from friendly to ally. Tirad will fight with you and for you until death, and if he can find a way back through the veil, he will fight for you again. You have reached level 10. Through hard work, you have moved forward along your path. As a Chaos Seed, you gain 6 points to distribute to characteristics instead of the usual 4. You also get 25% advancement to the skill of your choice. Crush your enemies. Honor your allies. Live! You have either characteristic points or skill percentage points to allocate from the previous level. Now that you have progressed again, you must allocate your points within the next week, or they will randomly be assigned for you. Richter dismissed the prompts. As wonderful as it was to level, the gravity of the events that had just occurred made it impossible to be happy. Tirad was still holding Jeremy's blood-stained body. "Tirad," Richter said, "you know you can't stay in the kingdom. Ronan survived, and if he knows who you are, there is a good chance that Count Stonek and by extension the king will know as well. You aren't safe here." The stress gave Tirad's visage a bleak and stark look. He simply nodded without speaking. "I would be proud and happy to have you join us in the Mist Village. As long as I live, you will have a home there." The man broke, a sob escaping him. The enormity of the past few days, the horrors that the woman he loved had suffered, and the loss of his good friend and his home was enough to faze anyone. He didn't allow his moment of vulnerability to continue, though. He carefully set down his friend's body on the ship deck, and he and Richter clasped wrists, each man leaning on the strength of the other.
"Thank you, my friend. I gladly accept your offer. I will return to Eve to help the other non-humans if we can discover the location, though."
You have been offered a quest, Fight for Those Who Cannot 3. You have helped many non-humans, but some still languish in slavery. Tirad is dedicated to saving them. Will you help these people to breathe free air again? Reward unknown. Yes or no?
"I will stand with you, Tirad. If we can help them, we will."
Tirad the human has become your companion. Companions will stay with you only as long as your goals align.
Tirad looked at him with a surprised expression. "I had heard of companions, but I've never known any, let alone thought I would become one."
"I'm happy to have you as one," Richter replied. The reward for the quest made more sense now. Richter had thought that when Tirad's disposition changed from neutral to friendly, that was the extent of it. The real benefit, though, was that finishing the quest set the stage to gain another companion.
"Sion and I have been companions from the beginning, but I'm still not sure what it means," Richter said.
"I do not know much, but what I have heard is that companions are devoted to one another's cause. As time progresses, I have heard that you can sense when the other is in danger, and with enough time and devotion to each other, you can sense intense emotions. There are stories of the greatest companions being able to share one another's strengths and mana, even abilities, but I think that is only fantasy."
Richter thought. Having companions was potentially a way to greatly increase one's strength. What if Sion could adopt his limitless ability? There was a lot to think about.
Tirad begged off after that, moving to comfort Isabel. Once the boat was far enough from the dock, the sailors unfurled the sails. Both ships were moving with the current and quickly picked up speed. Less than an hour later, the lights of Law could no longer be seen, and they were at last on their way home. The sailors had wrapped Jeremy's body in a tarp and taken it below deck. It was decided that he would be buried in the village. Richter sat next to Sion, who had awoken and used the healing ring. As the boat rocked gently, they leaned against the mast, staring out at the darkness. Chapter 26, Day 51, Hakor 3, 15,368 ABG. They linked with the other three boats in Leaf's Crossing, carrying the human settlers, supplies, and livestock. Rosie met them at the docks. Richter thanked her and pressed a few more coins into her hand. There was no difficulty or trouble in either arriving at or leaving the town. Not surprising, as their speed on the river had considerably shortened the trip time between Law and Leaf's Crossing. While a scout on a fast horse might have made the same time, the Count very likely didn't know who had made off with his property yet. Even if he had, it would take a large force considerably longer to gather and oppose them. The bigger fear would be if an attack ship had pursued them, but Tirad said there were not many of them. The royal fleet was comprised mostly of transport ships to move soldiers quickly among the numerous waterways. Luckily, they continued on after Leaf's Crossing unmolested. Richter decided to invest 4 of his new characteristic points into intelligence and another 2 into wisdom. He had decided that he needed a greater capacity for mana usage. The 50% skill boost he got from achieving levels 9 and 10, he invested into archery. It was his most advanced skill, and seemed like the best way to get a lot of bang for his buck. A day after leaving Leaf's Crossing, they entered the forest, and 5 days after that, they reached the Mist. Richter had spoken with all the ship's captains and warned them of the Mist's confusing properties. He had split his companions and Randolphus among the 5 ships, giving each immunity from the swirling gray vapors in the air around them. Though they had to move slowly, they were able to navigate the river with each helmsman listening to the 5. A monotone voice greeted him as the village came into view.
"Welcome back, my lord."
Chuckling lightly, Richter replied, "Hello, Futin. I missed your pretty face." The orb just pulsed slowly without replying. The mist workers had apparently been busy. The trench was now a good 20 feet deep and 30 feet wide. Trees had been cleared from the areas surrounding the village, leaving a potential killing ground if ever they were attacked. Large stacks of white stone were piled up alongside large mounds of iron ore. Several pyramidal piles of logs had been made from dozens of trees each as well. The loose rocks and debris within the ruined walls had all been removed. The village had been turned into an RTS gamer's wet dream. That actually wasn't quite right, he reflected. Richter had vast plans for his new home. What he was looking at was closer to the foundation for a grand strategy game. The kind of wonderfully beautiful morass that could devour your personal life for days or weeks at a time. Either way, it was a blank slate with plenty of resources. Richter shook his head. It had not been easy, and had involved travel, pain, blood, and loss, but he was finally ready to start making his new world, to begin the founding of his own kingdom. A small ceremony was held for Jeremy. His body was burned on a pyre. All of the non-humans gathered to show respect to the man who had died for their freedom. That night, several deer were roasted, and a small feast was held. Tirad told humorous stories about his old friend, to the laughter of many. He later told Richter that Jeremy would have appreciated being remembered like this. It took a couple days to unload everything from the ships. Once everything was removed, Richter, Sion, Tirad, Randolphus, and one other man Tirad vouched for guided the ships back out of the mist. Richter arranged for one ship to come back to this point in about a month's time. He needed a quick way to get back to Leaf's Crossing to bring his trade goods. Hopefully, he would have his own boat soon, but until then, the cost of paying for transport was worth shortening the weeks-long trip to only a few days. It was also considerably less dangerous on the waterways than hiking through the forest. They made the 10-mile hike back to the village on foot. Richter had been somewhat concerned that Randy wouldn't be able to keep up, but he kept pace with no difficulty. The weather was thankfully not too cold, as spring had started. The higher altitude did make a colder temperature than in Law, and the nearby mountains didn't help, but it was only slightly uncomfortable, not dangerous. The primary task everyone focused on was making shelters. The readily available resources made the task go quickly, though. While it was being constructed, all 290 souls stayed underground. It was not exactly comfortable with that many people, but it was safe and dry. Randolphus, or Randy, as Richter insisted on calling him to his clear frustration, showed his value immediately. He organized having a latrine dug, hunting parties, creating guard rotations, and assigning countless necessary tasks that Richter would not have thought about. The hunters were also given immunity from the mists, but only after each had been spoken to and vetted by Richter again personally. While it would be difficult for a trader to lead someone back to the village, he didn't want to take any unnecessary risks. Granting everyone immunity was now premature. He did roll the mist back 2 full miles from the center of the village, though, to make it easier to move around. The farmers were also eager to cultivate the lush soil outside of the city wall. They began preparing the land for planting, with guards along the periphery to protect against animal or, God forbid, monster attacks. The dwarves were massively excited about having access to relatively untouched land, and several disappeared on the first day into the hills surrounding the village, exploring tunnels and caves. As far as Richter was concerned, the forge was the next priority construction after shelter. According to the dwarves, a tavern was a close third. Apparently a few dozen casks of ale had been packed on the ships as essential supplies. The first building was finished in little over a week. It resembled a meeting hall more than a house. It was 200 feet long and 70 feet wide. Richter found the process fascinating. Each log had been denuded by stripping the bark. The bark hadn't gone to waste, though, as it was rendered down to make a rudimentary tar. The builders had strewn gravel along the ground from the quarry stones to protect from the damp. Over top the gravel, they had placed logs sawn in half longitudinally to make a crude floor a few inches above the ground. The walls had been erected in only a few days, but the roof took twice as long. It would have taken even longer, but the high strength and nearly endless stamina of the mist workers had saved considerable time. 2 rudimentary fireplaces had been built at either end. The large room that resulted was dry and, more importantly, warm at night. Everyone's mood improved drastically once everyone had more space to spread out in. Richter knew that for a fact. You have constructed your first building. Shelter is one of the basic necessities of survival. Your people require more than just the bare essentials, however. Though they have not complained, tensions were getting tight, and morale would have suffered if they had had to endure cramped conditions for much longer. Morale increased by +50. Further information regarding morale can be found on Village Interface. I have got to spend some time looking at that interface, Richter thought. He resolved to do it soon. Once the shelter was finished, the frantic pace slowed down a bit. Initially, everyone had worked almost feverishly from sunup to sundown to make the village livable. Sion had even taken charge of the kids to see which had an affinity for herb lore, which, surprisingly, many did. The smell of drying herbs and ingredients became commonplace in the longhouse that they all shared as a living space. A welcome surprise was that the meadow above the village held many valuable herbs, according to Sion. Richter had initially been concerned that there might be a problem with the humans and non-humans working together, but his worries came to nothing. Everyone seemed happy to apply themselves to honest work, unhindered by unjust laws. His new people walked around with smiles on their faces. There were many things to be done. Quests to be completed, enemies to be stopped, people to be rescued, items to be identified, and weapons to be forged. He also had an appointment to keep in Leaf's Crossing in about 5 weeks, as arranged with Hafiz. That meant they needed to collect the potions of clarity. Richter couldn't wait for more adventure. He would be lying, though, if he said he wasn't a bit tired. It was, he decided, time for a short vacation before everything got crazy again. When he discussed it with Sion, his friend wholeheartedly agreed. The next morning, they left for the Hearth Tree. Richter felt secure leaving the village in Randolphus's capable hands. The villagers already came to the man for instructions on a daily basis. Richter knew that he owed Mama a big hug and a fruit basket. The companions had a practical reason to go to the Hearth Tree in addition to just wanting a break. Both of their armors had taken a beating in the past several weeks, and the smiths in the village said they could not fully repair them as they had been made with sprite magic. Sion assured him that Hisako would be able to restore their armaments to full strength, though she might give them an earful about being more careful as well. It seemed like a fair trade to Richter. Both of them were missing the tough, diminutive woman. Richter left Tirad in charge with Randolphus as his capable aide. Richter stressed that he wanted construction started on a ship as soon as possible. They decided to take a relaxed pace, speaking little, nearly retracing their initial journey. It seemed so long ago. Encountering nothing more dangerous than a deer, they simply enjoyed the peace of the forest. It was a balm to both of them. It felt like coming home. After several days, they were greeted with the sight of the Hearth Tree surrounded by the sea of golden grass. As always, Hisako seemed to know that they were approaching and was waiting at the boundary of the Golden Sea.
"Be welcome at the Hearth Tree, Richter of the Mist Village," she said with a warm smile. "And welcome home, my son. I see you have grown in strength, hopefully in wisdom as well."
The last said with a wry arch of her eyebrow.
"Thank you, Mother. Yes, I have learned much and found a good friend and ally," Sion replied with a smile.
Richter walked forward and took her hand.
"Hearth Mother, thank you. Sion is more than a friend to me. He is a brother. There is no way I could have accomplished what I have accomplished without him. I formally extend the friendship and welcome of the Mist Village to you and your people. I sincerely hope that you will ask me for any help that you might need." A serious look came over her face.
"I was hoping that you would say that. There have been small camps of goblins and bugbears seen in the forest between here and the Firetip Mountains to the east. They are slaughtering all of the local wildlife and despoiling the forest. We need to clear them out and learn why they are making inroads into the forest. I will not stand by and watch the Forest of Nadria become like the Whisper Woods, overrun with evil creatures. The forest will be protected, no matter how many battles it takes. Will you help?"
You have been offered a quest. Protect the Forest 1. Bugbears and goblins have invaded the forest and are disrupting nature's balance. The Hearth Mother is asking for your help. You must destroy an enemy camp. Optional. Find out why the invaders are coming into the forest. Reward unknown. Yes or no?
"Ready to take out some more bad guys?" Richter asked Sion, smiling. Sion looked back with that bloodthirsty grin of his.
"Oh yes, brother. That's what we do."
The story continues. For more fun information and to contact the author, please go to www.litrpg.com. That is www.litrpg.com. This has been The Land, Founding, written by Alaron Kong, M.D., the father of American Lit RPG, narrated by Nick Podell. Copyright 2016 by Alaron Kong. Production copyright 2017 by Alaron Kong.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.